For the third and final film of our exorcism series, we're going back to the original possession film, 1973's The Exorcist. The director of this film just recently died, so this is going to be a little more of a tribute episode. I am Eric Lewis, and this is Horror Spoop. How's it going, everybody? As always, I am Eric Lewis, and this is Horror Spoop. We're on to the third and final film of our exorcism series, and I am very excited to get started with this thing. This film is the template for other exorcism films, such as the previous films that we've already discussed in this series, known as one of the most profitable horror movies of all time. The Exorcist came out December 26th, 1973. In my opinion, it is one of the best ways to celebrate Jesus' birthday. With an estimated budget of $11 million and a box office takeaway of $441,306,144, which this makes an amazing, and no wonder it became such an iconic film. The director for this film just recently died, so I'm going to give you a little more information than usual. William David Friedkin was born on August 29, 1935 in Chicago, Illinois, and he was an American film and television director, producer, and screenwriter, closely identified with the New Hollywood movement of the 1970s. Beginning his career in documentaries in the early 1960s, he directed the crime thriller film The French Connection in 1971, which won 5 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Director. Then he directed The Exorcist, which earned him another Academy Award nomination for Best Director. Other films that he has done are things like The Boys and the Band from 1970, The Sorcerer from 1977, and a dark comedy starring Matthew McConaughey called Killer Joe from 2011. Friedkin died from heart failure and pneumonia at his house in Bel Air, Los Angeles on August 7th, 2023, at the age of 87. He will be missed. He is a giant director in the film history, and Horror Spoop appreciates the crap out of him and the work that he has made. Now, for the writing of this film was based off of a novel from the same person who wrote the screenplay, which isn't done very often, by the way. William Peter Blatty also wrote for releases like The Great Bank Robbery from 1969, Daughter Lily from 1970, and lastly, Mastermind from 1976. Now let's jump right into this summary. This came from IMDb, so here we... When a teenage girl is possessed by a mysterious entity, her mother seeks the help of two priests to save her daughter. Now that was short, sweet, and to the point, so make sure to send in your summaries so I don't have to use IMDb anymore for these summaries. Now let's get right into this cast. First, we will start with the mother who cares so much for her daughter. Her name is Ellen Burstyn, and she plays Chris McNeil. She can also be found in stuff like Requiem for a Dream, which is very sad, in 2000, The Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage from 2006, and lastly, The Ellen Burstyn Show, which only had 13 episodes from 1986 to 1987. She does a wonderful job besides maybe her crying. Her crying just doesn't convince me very much. But next up, we have the Afflicted herself. The character is Reagan, but her real name is Linda Blair. She is in stuff like Savage Streets from 1984, Hell Night from 1981, and lastly, she is in a 20-minute-long parody of the Blair Witch Project called The Blair Bitch Project in 2000, and I badly, badly want to see that. So send it my way if you know where to find it, because I need to see it. Next, we have an old man who is one part priest and one part archaeologist. Max von Sydow is his name. Father Marin is his game in this film. You can also see him in stuff like Flash Gordon from 1980, Needful Things from 1993, and also Ghostbusters 2 from 1989. Next up is
Demi,
who is Father Damien Karras. His real name is Jason Miller, and you can find him in stuff like Light of Day from 1987. And that's starring Michael J. Fox, so for all my MJF fans. He's also in Rudy from 1993, and also Finding Home from 2003, so go check out all that he has to offer. And lastly, on the cast, we have the detective who is really having trouble believing that this child is capable of all the things that she is doing. His name in the movie is Lieutenant Kinderman, but his actual name is Lee J. Cobb. And you can find him on stuff like Exodus from 1960, which is almost a 3.5-hour movie, so make sure you have nothing to do or nowhere to go if you want to watch it. He can also be found in The Devil's Children from 1962, which also sounds like a possession type thing, but I don't know. And also, Blood, Sweat, and Fear from 1975. So go check that. That is it for the cast, so make sure to look all of them up to see other movies that they might be in. So this is my thoughts on the film. The idea of a possession film was not really thought to be suitable for audiences. But honestly, it ended up being the exact opposite. People loved how much it scared them. It was a heartbreaking film to watch when it is at the expense of an innocent little girl. Some crazy scenes in this film is like the rotating head scene, as well as the levitation scene. The movie is not just scary by what you see, but the atmosphere of the film also makes you feel the fear as well, instead of just the fear that you see with it. The movie is more of a film of sacrifice, but honestly, it's definitely better executed than the movie we talked about last week. The version you've never seen before is the version that I have on DVD, and it definitely adds some more scenes and some more scares. So go check out that version if you haven't. The first time that we see a possession and a mockery of religion in a film. And it really is a reflection of the changing of our society that was happening in the 1970s. I love this film very much because I love possession films and I love the mysticism of religion. The rest of this film, of course, you need to watch for yourself. Highly recommended by me. Horace Poop rates this 8.5 out of 10, which is by far the highest rating in this series. What do you think of my rating? Let me know in the Horror Spoop group. Now that I have said my piece about it, let's go to some filming locations. For some filming locations, we have the excavation site that they found the Pazuzu statue. And that is located in Hetra, Iraq. Which I am not sure where exactly in Hetra, Iraq that is found, but that is all I really could find about that. I like the idea that they actually went to Iraq instead of going to the desert in California, which is what a lot of Hollywood does for most situations in films. Next up is the stairs that one or two people trip down on probably a regular basis. You can find those stairs at Hitchcock Steps, 36th and Prospect Streets, Georgetown, Washington, D.C. So if you like to walk stairs for fitness, these are the stairs to use for sure. The McNeil residence is also somewhere you can go see. That house is found at 3600 Prospect Street, Georgetown, Washington, D.C. Most of this film was actually filmed in Washington, D.C., and that is another thing that Hollywood movies really don't do that often, actually do most of their filming on location. The church and the scene with the Virgin Mary with a Madonna bra on, if you know what I mean, then you know, that can be found as well. That is found at Dahlgren Chapel on the campus of Georgetown University in Georgetown, Washington, D.C. And lastly, the hospital scenes were filmed at Bellevue Hospital at 462 First Avenue, Manhattan, New York City, New York. That would do it for the locations. So if you find yourself in that area in Washington, D.C., or if you find yourself hurt and at Bellevue Hospital in Manhattan, New York City, then go and try to find, I guess, the room that they used in the hospital? I'm not sure. I don't know exactly how we would do that. But anyway, let's go and just get right into some trivia. Now, here's a little thing. Some of these trivia can be found as spoilers, but this movie has been out for so long. So just, like, get a grip, people. So let's just start this out. The scene where Reagan projectile vomits on Father Karras only required one take. The vomit was intended to hit Jason Miller, Father Karras, in the chest, but the plastic tubing misfired, hitting him in the face. His reaction of shock and disgust while wiping away the vomit is completely genuine, and Miller even admitted in an interview that he was very angered by this mistake. He might have been angered, but this has become one of the most iconic scenes in horror movie history, and also perfectly redone in Scary Movie 2. So that scene was awesome, and you need to see that scene in The Exorcist, and you need to see the scene in Scary Movie 2, because it is hilarious. Due to death threats against Linda Blair from religious zealots who believed the film glorified Satan, Warner Brothers had bodyguards protecting her for 6 months after the film's release. And because of these stupid people, society has started to stray from religion, because the loudest ones are usually also the craziest ones. My view is treat people with respect and also award them with the same freedom that you also ask for. The original teaser trailer, which consisted of nothing but images of the white-faced demon quickly flashing in and out of darkness, was banned in many theaters because it was deemed too frightening. This would be very frightening, but also this trailer would have got me 100% to get into the chair to see it. Trailers today give away too much of our story before you even see the film, and sometimes the trailer is even in order. That trailer is really well done, and I will try to share that trailer and share it on my socials so you can see it and tell me if you think that's a good trailer that they should have seen in theaters. One of the most famous scenes in the movie and the shot used for the posters and the cover of the DVD was inspired by the 1953 to 1954 series of paintings Empire of Light by René Magritte. It is the scene where Father Marin steps out of the cab and stands in front of the McNeil residence, bathed in an eerie glow. That is awesome, and I will also try to find those paintings and share those as well. When originally released in the UK, a number of town councils imposed a complete ban on the showing of the film. This led to the bizarre spectacle of exorcist bus trips, where enterprising travel companies organized buses to take groups to the nearest town to where the film was being shown. And that is why I say banning stuff doesn't really work very much. You can't really keep people from seeing something that they want to see. Even if they really didn't want to see it and it scars them later, they still wanted to see it because they thought it would be scary. And I agree with them. In the scene where the words help me arise from Reagan's torso, the effect was achieved by constructing a foam latex replica of actress Linda Blair's belly, writing the words out of a paintbrush and cleaning fluid, then filming the words as they formed from a chemical reaction. Special effects artist Dick Smith then heated the forming blisters with a blow dryer, causing them to deflate. When the film was run backwards, it appeared as though the words were rising out of young Reagan's skin in attempt to summon intervention. Now remember, these are cool scenes to hear about in this podcast, but really it does not do it justice if you don't watch the scenes for yourself, because the scenes themselves are very impressively done. So you need to go watch it. Don't just take my words for it. Though often cited as one of the most shocking scenes in cinema, the crucifix masturbation scene was actually greatly toned down from that of the novel. In the source book, the scene is much longer, gorier, and sexually explicit, with Reagan suffering a broken nose, butchery of her genitals, and also orgasming. If the scene went as the novel said, then we would 100% not have seen it in theaters. I am definitely glad that they calmed it down, so we could have all seen it as a theatrical release. William Friedkin had to take an all-British crew to film the Iraq scenes because the U.S. had no diplomatic relations with Iraq at that time. They were allowed to film near ancient buildings and actual archaeological digs on the conditions that including teaching Iraqi filmmakers advanced film technology and techniques, as well as they taught them how to make fake blood. And that's awesome, and a part of the deal of teaching the techniques is really what the art of film is all about. Teaching the techniques with another generation, with another country, with another way of making films, because the more films, the better if it's well made. And if you disagree with that, that's pretty ridiculous. In the movie, Father Dyer is played by William O'Malley, who is an actual priest, who until 2012 taught at Fordham Prep, a Jesuit high school, which is very awesome that at least one priest was actually interested in being in this film. And lastly, there were originally many very brief, blink if you miss them, cutaway shots in the 1973 release film, intended to create unease in the viewer. For instance, when the priest is dreaming of his mother coming up the subway, there is a brief cutaway of the demon's face painted in black and white, grimacing. There are two other places where this image is displayed. When Reagan, lying on the bed, turns to look at Father Marin and Father Karras, and just after the head-turning scene. The statue of Pazuzu, encountered by Father Marin in the opening scene, can clearly be seen in the background during the exorcism after the room has shaken violently. In the version you've never seen, which is the one I have, the images are superimposed over other scenes as well. The demon's face can be seen on the hood of the stove when Chris McNeil has just returned home from speaking with the doctors and the lights go out in the kitchen. The next image can be seen in the scene directly following the former, when Chris goes to check on Reagan. The face of the statue flashes very briefly, but brightly, onto Reagan's bedroom door as Chris opens it. When Chris closes the window, realizing that Sharon isn't present, and leaves the room, the full statue is superimposed softly on the wall to the left of Reagan's bedroom door. In the longer version of the film released on Blu-ray, called the Extended Director's Cut, these two images of the statue have been removed again. These cutaways definitely do what they were meant to do, because it definitely weirds the crap out of me, for sure. Now that I'm done bringing up all this trivia, let's get into some taglines. We have technically three of them. Two of them for the film and one of them for the version that you've never seen before. The first one is, "What an excellent day for an exorcism." And the second is, "Something almost beyond comprehension is happening to a girl on this street, in this house. And a man has been sent as the last resort. This man is the Exorcist." And lastly, "The scariest movie of all time has returned in a version that you have never seen before." Now, which tagline do you choose? This question will be made in the way of a voter poll that you can find on the Horace Poop Group, so make sure to go vote for that and also follow the Horace Poop Group. I would be very appreciative. Two questions and then you are free to go. The first question, do you agree with my rating of 8.5 out of 10? That is pretty dang high. And I do understand why you think that wouldn't be. But I am standing firm at my 8.5, but let me know if you disagree. And the second question is, what other films should I do for this podcast? Let me know on the Horror Spoop group as well. The next series I'm doing is going to be a three-parter. It's a Shudder series. I'm going to be doing three films that you can find right now on Shudder, so keep your eyes peeled back on Facebook to see what films those will be. And also, make sure to go and get Shudder before this series. It's really worth it, I promise. Now, this is the end of the episode, and that means this is the end of the Exorcism series. I hope you've enjoyed it, because I definitely have, and I will see you in the next series soon. I am Eric Lewis, and this is Horse Poop. See ya. Thank you so much for listening to Horror Spoop. Make sure to go follow this podcast, rate this podcast, and tell your friends about this podcast. As well, you can go to Horror Spoop on Facebook, Instagram, or you can also email me with any questions at horrorspoop@gmail.com. So please, I hope to see you again.